evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, March 15, 2024. Lack of media literacy has exposed South Sudanese to cyber criminals.
Cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. It's not us to entirely spread the message. So if I have taught you something today on how to stay safe online, you should also do the same to your family and friends.
And some petrol stations in Juba have defied orders from Central Equatorial State Government to shut down.
Security forces came and closed this petrol station, but in the morning they opened. Again, security forces came and closed it, and they did not work that day. This morning, they opened again.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The increased use of digital platforms for communication in South Sudan has given hackers opportunity to scam people on WhatsApp and Facebook. Some South Sudanese say cyber attacks are very common across the country, but analysts blame negligence, illiteracy, and lack of protection from the country's National Communication Authority. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
Team manager, a local musician, also known as Rabona Boy, says when his account was hacked, it took days before well-wishers helped recover his account. He says the government should provide data security and awareness to South Sudanese about increasing cyber threats in South Sudan.
Last year, my official page was hacked. In the process, I was frustrated because I couldn't, you know, have access to my fund. I also lost some contracts because my page is the only way that I use it for advertisement, most especially with the organization and other stuff. The government should offer training. The awareness message must also reach out to a lot of people, not only within the capital of Juba.
Oyet Patrick, a proprietor and the CEO of Juba Echo, an online television platform, says he has not been able to retrieve his Facebook account or be in touch with thousands of followers after hackers took control of it. He says the government should invite Meta, the parent company of Facebook and WhatsApp, to open an office in South Sudan and address issues facing online users.
We contacted many groups in South Sudan here who offer IT services, including Safeticom. They could not help us. So it took us about 4 months to recover the page. As we speak now, the page has been taken down again. We're in a very dangerous territory because you are not protected. You are basically on your own. And when things go wrong, nobody is coming to help you.
Amid Victoria, incident manager at Safeticom, a platform created to deal with online cyber safety, says the organization provides awareness for both offline and online users on ways to handle online attacks and cyberbullying. Victoria says most cases of cyber attacks are due to negligence from users of online platforms.
We have been able to reach over 500 individuals in separate cyber safety trainings. Most of the cases we get are people who fall prey to online scams like phishing. People tend to click on links anyhowly, so they introduce viruses. They give away their information by clicking on those links and forwarding verification codes.
Despite the challenges affecting online users in South Sudan, a group of youth innovators in South Sudan are investing in online businesses to draw customers. Majid Faiz, South Sudanese youth innovator and a co-founder of Sahil, a platform that bridges the gap between suppliers and businesses, says he believes online business will flourish in the country.
The main issue, our concern, is security in the country. Even if we establish Sahil, the distributors who are carrying the supplies from one place to another, there's a huge security risk. So they will have to have some compliance with the government, with insurance and so on.
Skopa Swangin is manager of satellite television DSTV in South Sudan. He says the company has survived several online attacks.
Cyber security attack, it has become a business for many individuals or even corporations that there are so much doing that. But in DSTV, we have a full department that regulate and they monitor the cyber attack. It's called Eredo, and that department is mostly monitoring all businesses in terms of cyber attack, and even they give cyber alerts to all operations in case they happen to experience one.
The the communications officer at MTN South Sudan, a major telecommunication company offering internet in South Sudan, says they are working to protect online users from hackers. Dennis Lejubo says the fight against hackers is a collective responsibility.
There are quite a number of tools that are used to protect the customers, and for sure, all the customers' information is confidential and protected. We have highly skilled engineers and IT experts who employ certain tools to ensure that there is protection for all the customer information that's coming through.
Robert Arik, a cybersecurity analyst with the South Sudan Incident Response Team, SAT, a national body that deals with online threats, says most cyber attackers in South Sudan target financial institutions. Arik says the government has enacted measures to control the increasing number of online scammers in South Sudan.
The SAT is going to launch, and the SAT is going to require each one of us to do their part, because cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. It's not us to entirely spread the message. So if I have taught you something today on how to stay safe online, you should also do the same to your family and friends, so that we all have a safer online environment.
As technology advances, the ability of civil society, regulators and government organizations to prevent cyber attacks remains a challenge in South Sudan, where media literacy is very low. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, some petrol stations in residential areas in Juba town have defied a government order to shut down. One resident says the Central Equatoria State government is doing very little to implement the order, but the state's security advisor says two people have been arrested for violating the order. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
The gasoline petrol station in Juba's Katur neighborhood was ordered to close down, but motorists are still able to fuel their cars here. 2 days ago, the Central Equatoria State Government shut down this station and 14 others in Juba for operating in residential areas. The manager of the gasoline petrol station refused to be recorded. He says his station was allowed to operate after some discussions with state authorities. But Nargis Igale, who lives nearby, says the petroleum company defied the state government's order.
Asakir kanja gafolo mahalle.
Security forces came and closed this petrol station, but in the morning they opened. Again, security forces came and closed it, and they did not work that day. This morning they opened again. It got us wondering why they continue to operate. I call on the government to continue with its work and close this petrol station and move it to another place far away from residential area.
Igale's house is separated from the gasoline petrol station by a thin fence of reed. She says her kitchen is close to the fence and she worries about fire safety. Ernesto Rupai, another Juba resident, alleges corruption plays a role in the state government's ability to implement its orders.
When this petrol station was being established, we rejected any plan for petrol station here. But later things changed and we were called names. But this can bring a big disaster. Any small fire will cost this entire neighborhood a lot. In South Sudan, a lot of things are said than done. But when they are given something, things happen. They close like this, and later you see petrol stations operating.
Angelo Daya is the Central Equatoria State Security Advisor and head of the committee tasked with closing fuel stations in Juba residential areas. He says violators of the government order will be held accountable.
We have so far arrested two now. We have arrested the people and they are already in jail. We are not going to jump. These are violators. We are doing it now. We have already declared our security. We have every petrol station that we close, we have security there. They have already informed us. And he's not talking, but of course he informed us. Now we are going to do our exercise. These are violators.
An intense argument flared up at M.O. Abdi Petrol Station between someone who identifies himself as an advisor in northern Barel Ghazali State and police officials who were enforcing the state government order.
Come on.
Dyer says nobody will deter the state government from enforcing the law.
We will get it after arresting them. Then we will see the powerful people, whether who and who. Then now I will face them myself, not anybody.
The Juba City Council said earlier this week that petroleum companies operating the city are guided by safety requirements, but some stations got operating licenses without proper procedures. The crackdown on fuel stations come after a fuel tank exploded last Sunday, sparking fears among the Juba residents. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Sudan, where Human Rights Watch is urging the United Nations Security Council to take action against individuals hindering aid access in Sudan's Darfur region. This call comes as UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres prepares to inform the Council of Sudan's descent into severe conflict-induced hunger. Nabil Biagio spoke with Akshar Kumar, Crisis Advocacy Director at Human Rights Watch.
We are deeply concerned about rising levels of conflict-induced hunger in Sudan. By that, I mean babies, older people are starving to death. There's been multiple incidents reported, not just in Darfur, but also in Khartoum, where people who weren't able to access food have passed away. We are hearing about pregnant mothers or mothers who just give birth, unable to feed their babies and unable to find any kind of formula or milk for them. And all of these circumstances are largely man-made. This is not a natural disaster. It has to do with the consistent obstruction and hindrance of the delivery of humanitarian aid and assistance by the warring parties in Sudan. And it's truly appalling that now in the year 2024, we can know that people are dying because they can't access food. We can hear about it. And yet we see UN bodies like the Security Council still unable to respond decisively with action.
Yes, I will get back to your call on the UN Security Council in a second. But when we talk about obstructing aid access, I know the army, the military government in Port Sudan has come under a lot of criticism for that. If we talk about Darfur, that's like RSF, Rapid Support Control Area. But still the army has been accused of denying access, including by aid agencies. The permanent representative of Sudan to the UN Security Council, Al-Haris Idris, Al-Haris Mohammed, he said last week when Antonio Guterres, the UN chief, appealed for a ceasefire and humanitarian assistance in Sudan, he said various armed groups and elements from Sudan's region have been drawn to the conflict and it has compromised its border security, and that his government is under pressure to assess the country's border crossing. Does that seem like a real issue to you?
We know the Sudanese authorities have said that it's their responsibility to manage border crossings. But we also know that Lieutenant General Burhan has said specifically that authorities would no longer allow aid to reach areas under the control of the rapid support forces. And I think that shows a really problematic intention, which has to do with the lives of the people who are living under the control of the rapid support forces and an indifference to those lives to make a point about defeating an armed group. So yes, the Sudanese authorities do have a responsibility to maintain border security, but they should not use the lives of Sudanese people as pawns in that bargaining. We know that Sudan announced on March 6th that they would allow limited cross-border movement into Darfur from Chad, and they specifically mentioned the Tina border crossing. But humanitarian aid workers, for example, the medical charity Doctors Without Borders, they were very clear that this is insufficient because using that single border crossing like Tina or trying to move things only cross-line from Port Sudan would leave vast areas in Darfur, Kordofan, Khartoum and Jazeera State still inaccessible. And that's the truth of the matter. What's being offered by the Sudanese authorities is far too little in the way of free and unimpeded movement. And that's what's required by the law. So they're not meeting their duties and obligations.
Your statement mentions that the expected alert from the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, to the Security Council, as well as OCHA's findings, the Office for Coordinating Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan, these findings underscore the severity of the hunger crisis. What specific actions does Human Rights Watch recommend the Security Council take to address the crisis and ensure unhindered humanitarian access?
Well, this white note that the Security Council has gotten, it's very similar to one that we heard about last month when the council was alerted to people starving in Gaza. And we saw the kind of attention and interest that note generated with global media, with an open meeting and a discussion of the need to shift things. So the white note, in a way, it changed the conversation. And I really hope Sudanese get the same attention. But you asked me specifically about the Security Council, and we do have a call for council members. We know there are two diplomatic delegations there, the Swiss and the Mission of Guyana, who say they're the focal points for food insecurity. They also sit on the Sanctions Committee. So we can't disconnect these issues. We know obstruction is part of the reason why people are starving, and so we think that the council should use this as an opportunity to begin the process of designating individuals who are responsible for violating the laws of war and therefore eligible for designation solely on the basis of their role in obstructing the delivery of aid to people who need it.
That's Aksha Kumar, Crisis Advocacy Director at Human Rights Watch. She spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio earlier today from New York. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Malawi introduces genetically modified seeds to fight hunger. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Malawi has embarked on trials of genetically modified maize aimed to curb recurrent hunger and pests such as armyworms and caterpillars. The trials come amid concerns about the possible effects of genetically modified organisms have on health and environment. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
The four armyworm has caused devastating crop losses across Africa since it arrived in 2016 in Malawi at Lilongwe University of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Biotechnology research scientist Kingdom Kwapata is leading studies in two varieties of maize whose genes have been modified to resist the pest. Such engineered crops are considered genetically modified organisms, or GMOs.
We needed a solution because our farmers are suffering. Our main purpose and aim for the research is to establish whether the gene that confers resistance against four armyworms and other lepidopteran insects is effective.
The trials are expected to take about 5 years. They are conducted in a fenced and confined maize field 500 meters away from any traditional crop to avoid possible contamination with the traditional varieties. In the meantime, lawmakers, traditional leaders, and farmers have visited the trial site to observe its progress. Some farmers are excited about the trial, which is in its first year. Stanley Kapichila says this will solve the problem of lack of money to buy pesticide to kill four armyworms, which have been attacking his maize garden for many years now. And he says he's now a happy farmer because these trials are solving the problem. Another subsistence farmer, Esther Ganjawala, is skeptical about the technology. She notes that replacing local maize varieties with high-yielding hybrids has created new troubles. She says that these new varieties are not good at all. You can't harvest anything without applying fertilizers, and they are also easily attacked by pests. She says that's why there is growing poverty. But with their local varieties, she says they could harvest even without applying fertilizers. Researcher Kwapata says genetically modified crops have been introduced safely elsewhere, including the United States, Brazil, and Argentina. But many in Malawi are concerned about possible health and environmental impacts. Hadwell Kanie is a permaculture specialist with the Never Ending Food Project in Malawi.
So even though the target is to make sure the stalk borer doesn't attack the maize or the armyworms, but actually the introduction of this GMO will affect other pet beneficial insects such as bees and other birds. So that is something that we don't want. We don't want to disturb that cycle.
Kanie also fears that once introduced to farmers, the GMO maize would keep other local crops from growing. Kwapata says there is no evidence that would happen, but he acknowledges that people are concerned.
There's a lot of skepticism. There's a lot of political anxiety. But in the final analysis, as researchers, we are saying that the nation needs to give us a chance to do the research diligently, independently, without due influence.
Kwapata says the researchers will present results of the trials only to government authorities so they can decide whether the GMO maize should be introduced in Malawi. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
It's time for your comments, and today we start with Aligo Joel in Uganda, who writes, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus and the rest of the world. I really fail to understand what our country's leadership is aiming from top to bottom. Poor management, weak security, and collapse of economy, and yet they are alive. Let them wake up and do something good for their citizens." Martin Manuel Yogol in Juba writes, "Hello, VOA. Allow me to convey my best wishes to the South Sudanese women and the African women at large upon the celebration of the International Women's Day, a day for power of women in building up a viable society is recognized and appreciated. Long live South Sudanese women. Long live our mothers. Congratulations." Thomas Kuntoch in Old Fangak Payam, Fangak County, Jonglei State writes, "Hello, VOA, South Sudan in Focus. The devalued South Sudanese pounds against U.S. dollar is very tough, and the economic crisis in South Sudan. South Sudanese pounds has lost its strength against the dollar very quickly within these 2 months. What is the government planning to do on this issue?" Ibrahim Kandaki from Southern Kordofan State in Sudan writes, "Hello, VOA team. We still urge the UN Security Council to put pressure on the two fighting parties to adhere to the ceasefire, allow humanitarian aid into the country." Majak Mako Majong from Makoch Payam in Tonj North County of Warab State writes, "I condemn the killing of two border riders between Rumbek North and Mayendid County on Monday morning by unknown gunmen. However, I'm appealing to the government of the three neighboring states of Lakes, Warap, Unity, to apprehend the perpetrators and bring them to book." Guy John William from Juba, South Sudan writes, "Hello, VOA. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you and all listeners. the issues of the economic crisis and the rate of dollar against the South Sudanese pounds is very concerning. The price of commodity in the market are very high. We need the government to intervene so that people can live normal life. James Roy Majok from Unity State Bantu Town writes, "Hi, Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. Here in Unity State, prices of commodities are rising every day across the whole Unity States, seven counties, especially Mayom County, Roop Corner County, Gwit County, Kochkwa County, Mayendit County and Ler County, Panyajir County. I'm appealing to the national government to do something about prices of commodities and the inflation that is affecting everyone in South Sudan. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the view of Voice of America or South Sudan in Focus radio program. Keep your voice and text messages coming. We shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, March 15. And we now leave you with the song 500 by Gas Mwete.
Défoncé, mais mon verre est départ. Nos vies ont changé, aujourd'hui ça dépite. Derrière nos écrans, on se tape des parts. Tic, mais un vrai voudrait monter à part. À bord du vaisseau, mais aïe aïe, le bourreau de vaisseau. Mais t'as pas vu les dollars, mais t'as pas vu les petits. Mais t'as pas vu les ramos. Mais t'as pas vu les ramos. T'as pas vu la panoplie. Aujourd'hui ça dépite. Derrière nos écrans on se tape des pas. Chic mais un vrai voudrait monter à part. À bord du vaisseau mère. Aïe aïe le bourreau de vaisseau mère. Mais t'as pas vu les dollars.
Mais t'as pas vu les dollars.
Mais t'as pas vu les petites. Mais t'as pas vu les ramos.
Mais t'as pas vu les ramos.
T'as pas vu la panoplie. T'es pas la panoplie.
C'est ça. Oui t'as moi.
Listening to Gas Mwete and the song Sengsa. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Rob Macklin, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.